This is Ken Kennedy, and this is Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone, episode 63, recorded on Tuesday, October 15th, 2013. Well, it's been a little busy, so I'm a day late, but no big deal. It's difficult to do the podcast yesterday. I wasn't alone in the house, and I'm still a little too self-conscious to do this sort of thing, you know, with like people be bopping around. I mean, I guess I could have gone in the bedroom and shuttered myself, but then plus, like, you know, just the background noise in the house and everything would have been much larger potential for that. So but we're started, and I do need to get it done today because I've got the SQL Pass Summit, the SQL Server database thing during the day the rest of the week, so I won't actually be here in the house or in Atlanta, since it's in Charlotte, which is the main reason I'm going. So there we are. So we're here. So homestead wise, we are just about finished with the guest room. I'm sure everybody's very glad to hear. We did primer paint stuff this past weekend, and then Charlotte put on a coat of regular paint yesterday. It's probably going to need one more coat of regular paint, and then that should be about it. It should be done like today or tomorrow, I would expect. But the main thing I was going to talk about is one of the things I've been kind of engrossed in lately, and that's two new role-playing games, pen and paper role-playing games, although these are also PDF role-playing games, that I've picked up, and Eclipse Phase and Unknown Armies. Unknown Armies, I actually saw it was a bundle of holding that was shared on Google+. Bundle of Holding is probably not as well known. It's kind of like a Humble Bundle of the like indie or non-indie nowadays, but still some good deals of electronic games. But Bundle of Holdings are from a different company, kind of doing the same sort of deal mainly with RPGs, and it's kind of the same pay what you want, and usually there's if you pay over the average or you pay over a certain amount, you get some extras. I think the minimum amount you had to pay for the extras and all was like $6 or $6.25, something like that. So it was a super good deal. Because I've seen this game before. I recognized the cover from seeing it in like gaming stores. And it's a modern day underground occult. Weird conspiracies. You enter into a world that's, you know, the true world, you know, underneath ours, and you're seeing what's really going on sort of game. It looks actually pretty cool. I'm partway through that rule book. I've been kind of jumping back and forth. I've been on Eclipse Phase more recently, but at first I have Unknown Armies in PDF, so it was more portable, and it was the only one I had at PDF for a while. As for Eclipse Phase, I don't actually remember where I bumped into it somewhere online, let's just say. But, you know, there was a point I looked at it a little bit. It's of a genre that I tend to like. And once I realized that it's basically a darker, grittier, more whacked out version of GURPS Transhuman Space, I was like, I got to get this thing. It's actually a hardcover, which I did buy. It's on Amazon, and a PDF. And the interesting thing about that is, like with the Humble Bundles, you're buying a PDF, and conceivably you could buy this one too. You're buying PDFs that have no DRM. They're just plain Jane PDFs. You can read them with anything. But this PDF on all the Eclipse Phase stuff is actually Creative Commons licensed. It's I think attribution non-commercial, which would be the expected. But so the PDF version, actually anybody can pick up, and I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes to the both to the Unknown Armies website, which doesn't really they advertise, trumpet on the website, the main website, that it is Creative Commons licensed, but I didn't see a direct link to it there, which I kind of can understand because they do want you to buy the book. But I mean, all you have to do is type Unknown Armies PDF into Google, and the guy, like the main guy, has a WordPress blog or a Tumblr, one or the other. that he has links to all of them on, and that's where I downloaded it. So now I've got pretty nifty to have both of those in your Dropbox. So, you know, I've got them on all my machines. I've got them on my, you know, tablet. I've got them on my phone. You know, I can just read them anywhere. It's neat. So ClipSpace, though, is I'm not going to say my favorite of the two. It's just I think I like them both. And it's hard for me to get favorites in these sort of things. I love role-playing games. I've loved them ever since I started playing them, you know, and I've been playing them since 1980s-ish, probably. 1980-ish, not 1980. So I played it well through the 80s. I think 79 or 80 was when I got the blue box of Dungeons & Dragons. I think the second one was probably Traveler, and I've gone through games. I have many, many games still, but I've gone through several phases where I culled myself down to almost nothing, just whatever that period of my life, or I actually like my Advanced Dungeons and Dragons rule books. I gave away to somebody who wanted to learn how to play, and I wasn't playing at the time. But so I've culled almost completely down, and then I grow back up, and then I cull, and I've done that two or three times. And a lot of times, you know, I have had numerous games that I never actually GM'd, played. I tend to GM more than play. Just that's kind of, I've always been the person with the games and was willing to GM. It's kind of like being a support in League of Legends. If you're willing to do it, people are willing to let you. But all those games I've read the rule books front to back. Just haven't always been able. It depends on, you know, time in the life. Like, we're actually kind of out of it now, but hopefully our fall Geek Fest is coming up soon with my nerd buddies, and we should be doing some role-playing gaming, so that'll be fun. But I've always loved reading the books as much as gaming itself, so I always read them, which is what I'm doing right now with Eclipse Phase. And it's a pretty cool, it's like far out, it's kind of mid future. It's right around the turn of the 22nd century. So 85 years. It's strongly transhuman, really almost post-human, kind of either you could argue they're in the midst of a singularity event or they've just had one occur. And probably most people who listen to this would know that singularity events are it's a word that's been used, you know, in other ways. It's used in physics, for example, but Werner Vinge, a science fiction author, used it in this notion of when we hit it, it's a point at which we're going to have difficulty knowing what's going to be on the other side. Usually, that's what I'm looking for, kind of built around the advent of self-improving AI, artificial intelligence, that because there's kind of a presumption in a lot of the singularity extropian type groups that stuff's going to go beyond human very quickly. And in this Eclipse Phase universe, a lot of times they're called weakly godlike because they don't literally can't create the universe, at least yet. But, you know, they can do things that to us look like gods. These weakly godlike AIs have actually already been generated once, at least. And when that occurs, they go through a period of several weeks where they pretty much destroy the Earth. They kill billions and billions of people. Many people escape the Earth or are unable to escape the Earth. And in this world, they already have like brain uploading technology. You know, this happened, I think, gosh, I can't remember the timeline. I think the AI event occurs in like the 2060s or 2070s. So it's been a few years at this point, since it happened. But yeah, so a lot of people escape by, their body doesn't escape, but they literally upload their brain and shoot it off of the Earth to, you know, to a satellite or to a habitat, you know, partway across the solar system, even just to get it out of off the Earth. And then their body gets destroyed by these, they're called the Titans. And so then they pretty much destroy the Earth. They kind of, you get the idea that they're getting ready to destroy the rest of the solar system. And then they kind of, they just disappear. And humans are just trying to figure out what the fuck happened and go on from there. And then they get some hints of what might have occurred. And there are these like interstellar gates that are found and things like that. It's nifty. And, you know, it's out there, but it's nifty. Like I said, the brain backups and notions of uploading and of creating info life, they call it like non. They call the AI, and this would be, you know, an argument point. They call the AI that is able to self-improve to, you know, past human, far past human seed AI. And then they also have an idea of non-seed AI that's still artificial intelligent and arguably conscious, but can't go through that singularity point. And so those, your characters can also be those. And so people, since we have this notion of uploading and of these, you know, pure information, never human born intelligences, people can download these into various sorts of bodies, and they call it re-sleeving, which is a pretty cool term. You can do it for convenience. You can do it for after being killed. You can do it just on a whim because you want to be, you know, they have bioroids, which are grown like biological bodies. They have robotic bodies. They have, you know, exotic bodies that are various, like genetically altered, obviously, and, you know, improved and stuff. Pretty crazy concepts. I really like, I mentioned before, there's another transhuman role-playing game called GURPS. It's from the GURPS system, which is by Steve Jackson Games, called GURPS Transhuman Space, which has a lot of similarities to this. It's just not quite as far out there. They're both setting around the same time. It's just obviously the universe has gone a little differently. And Transhuman Space has a lot of this stuff, but it's more, it's maybe 20 years behind, I would say, in like, you know, in its technology scale. The things like the re-sleeving are not nearly as common in that world as they are in this one. There are a bunch of things, but a couple of things I wanted to talk about in particular that are of interest to me with this stuff. One of them is actually a game's rule thing. And like I said, I do like rules. I'm not what's known in the tribe as a rules lawyer. I'm not somebody who is so stuck up on them. Even though I do GM a lot, I GM loosely. I'm there to have fun, and I'm there to advance the story, and I'm not going to let some stupid rule that says we can't do such and such a stupid, you know, you can only jump 2.3 meters, you know, with a strength of X, and I need you to jump two and a half meter thing to move the story along. You're jumping that thing, you know. I'm not one of those types, but I do like the rules in general. I just like that mechanistic notion of reality, I guess, of, you know, of like the rules underneath things. And an interesting thing to know is historically, and there have been three main types of dice generally, but of providing the randomness and kind of, although that is what provides the randomness, but it's also the way that the games are built, like the skills and the attributes and such. And there have been some one-off weird ones with cards and all sorts of weird stuff. But in general, there are games that have focused on the 20-sided die. So most of your rolls are in the realm of 1 to 20. There are games that focus on 6-sided dice. A lot of times, 3 6-sided dice, the 3d6, 3 to 18 range. And these mix and match, like Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, for example, uses all of them, but it uses 3d6 for your attributes and D20 for most other things. And then the D100, which is either 2 20-siders or 2 10-siders rolled separately. You can't actually buy 100-sided dice. They basically look like balls, but they're kind of just novelties. But generally how it's rolled is either 2 10-sides or 2 20-sided dice, one of which is intended to be your tens number and one of is the one. So you can roll a 7 on one die and a 1 on the other, and it's a 71. Usually called a percentile system. And so you have like the GURPS system that I talked about before is, boy, this is, I just realized this is going pretty deep nerd role-playing game episode. and it probably won't go any less. So if that stuff bores you, you can go ahead and turn this one off now. In the GURPS system, though, everything is D6. It's almost all 3D6 for both attributes and skill rolls. You know, that's the range of stuff that you're looking at. And you're usually rolling under, you're trying to roll under a certain number with, like, say, 14 with 3 6-sided dice, and lower the better, usually. D20 can vary how you use it. And then the percentile percentile gives you the most granularity. A lot of times you're not using every bit of it. You know, a lot of times you're stopping at increments of 5, in which case you're kind of equivalent to the D20. But you have the option of, a +1 or a +2% or a -7% or something. And so you've got percentile rolls. You're all the way down to the 1% level change. And you roll the dice and you're trying to roll under. You know, if it's a 60% chance, your attack with beam weapons is 60%. You're rolling 60 or less, and usually lower is good back in the day. Because here's where the interesting thing was, and this must be something, I've been in a more of a board game mode for the past couple of years than a role-playing game mode. I haven't bought a huge number of role-playing games. It's like these two. I probably have bought another one. I can't think offhand. I bought Transhuman Space probably 4 or 5 years ago. And that's a standard GURPS. Their rules are, rule system wise, is literally all the same. That's the pull point. I'll go ahead and say it. GURPS is generic universal role playing system. And so the skeleton of how the abilities are determined and skills are rolled and stuff is exactly the same overall, or basically the same over all the GURPS, whether it's GURPS fantasy or GURPS science fiction, GURPS, Transhuman Space, or GURPS superheroes. All the skills are the same, so the differentiation is in the different types of worlds and stuff. But I've been out of the role playing game purchasing for a couple of years. Been buying more board games, and so both of these games use a mechanic that I wasn't familiar with. It must be a thing now. I mean, it would be my guess. It's percentile rolls, but high as long as it's under the number that you need is good. So if you have a 60% chance of doing something, you want to roll less than 60, but you want to roll or 60 or less. But you want to roll as close to 60 as possible. The higher, the better. And both of these games, like I said, use this mechanic. And then they also use a interesting mechanic. They use it slightly different ways, but a flip-flopping mechanic where in certain situations, If you're meeting a criteria that is set for your character that's relatively rare, in certain situations, you can roll, let's say you're trying to roll 60 or less and you roll 82, you're allowed to spend a point or do a thing and flip-flop that roll to a 28, which, although is not a great success in the higher is better camp, is a success versus the 82 being a failure. So just from a rule mechanics point, to me, that's interesting because it's a new one that I haven't played before. I don't think I've thought about it. It may pop into my head. Oh, yeah, I have played this. But I don't remember. I don't remember a percentile, but the higher, the better system before in my experience. So that's interesting. And then just from hearing me talk much more about the background of Eclipse Phase than Unknown Armies, it's probably apparent that I love that transhuman, post-human stuff. I mean, I do like the occult, weird, underground stuff too. I have a bunch of games and have had a bunch of games that have that sort of background. But Eclipse Phase also gives me one of the things that I really like from role-playing games and from fiction, science fiction, fantasy in particular. It seems to be more common there. The ability to use the game or the book to expose something and toy about with an idea that, somebody's worried about or we think might happen in the future or is happening now and we want to. A lot of times that's actually what we're dealing with. Cory Doctorow's little brother and the notion of surveillance in 1984 for that matter and the notion of, of tyranny and surveillance and the constant big brother nature and the dangers of totalitarianism. We can do the same thing in games, obviously. And Eclipse Phase has this built into it in a very explicit, a much more explicit way, part of the background tension of the game is something that I see coming in our future. I mean, not to the level, but here, I'll just work through it. It's a good place to tinker with these concepts. It's this notion, it's a notion of like an ultra hyper capitalism versus like a post scarcity reputation based economy. In Eclipse Phase, it's primarily a location based thing. The areas that are near Earth that are still okay to be in, you know, like the Moon and Mars primarily, they're the two most highly populated areas in the solar system left. And they've been built up much longer than some of the other areas. And so they've always been more exploited, you could say, by regular corporate interests, whatever corporate interest means. Whereas at the Astro Belt and beyond, for the most part, there's some exceptions, but for the most part, this is where the more eccentric type, once we got into a situation where people could, you know, relatively small groups of people could put together the resources to get into space, these small eccentric groups would head further out to kind of escape. You know, it's like the Wild West, the return of the Wild West, the ultimate Wild West. And even in that area out there, there are multiple factions in what's called the new economy. And this is this notion of the economy being more based around reputation and barter and gift exchange than typical capitalism. You know, we've got anarcho-capitalist types out there. You've got like cyber democracy, you know, direct, everybody's linked together and you know, individually voting on things. They've got highly self-sufficient, just crazy anarchist individualist types that are, you know, living, you know, in a habitat all by themselves out in the middle of the, you know, the middle of the, you know, deep solar system. Middle of the deep. Oh, well, whatever. But, you know, and this is enabled by, you know, the cool nanotech future, right? You know, this is like the cornucopia machine that can build, you know, virtually anything given raw materials. And, you know, they've got a level of advanced robotics and tech that allows, you know, raw materials to just be gathered for you. So, you know, getting the raw materials is no longer a problem. You know, it's not like you're going to have people working in coal mines for the most part. So, you know, peace people have to basically, you know, the material stuff has been taken care of and people have to basically figure out what to do with themselves, right? Whereas in the, back in the close-in hypercorp, you know, it's more similar to like a jazzed up version of our world. There's a lot of, and they do that by restricting the post-scarcity stuff. You know, they restrict the cornucopia machine. It's not something that you can, you know, anybody can get a hold of and make what they want with. And so they've kind of kept tight hold of even these post-scarcity type technologies. And now I'm not trying to say that I think we've got, you know, Star Trek replicators or cornucopia machines, same thing, whatever you want to call it. We don't have them right around the corner, certainly in our world. But I don't think they're beyond the realm of possibility, first off. I think that nanotech is a thing, you know. I mean, you know, we use the word all the time now, but it's not the Eric Drexler type stuff that I think to a certain extent may be possible eventually. And beyond that, what we do have nowadays are, you know, 3D printing, various other, you know, there are multiple other low capital manufacturing technologies that are all becoming much more easy to use now. We've got constantly improving robotics and computerization. The stuff is, you know, it's almost already hit. I wouldn't call it mainstream, but there are more mainstream people that understand what you're talking about now than even just a few years ago. This stuff is rushing at us at a hugely accelerated pace. You know, what we're doing, you know, is our world, because of our advances in with tech and computation,
we're able to make even real world stuff, even things that are, you know, cars and furniture and stuff, is really made of computation to a certain amount. You know, we use computers to make building these things orders of magnitude more simply than they were even, you know, one manufacturing generation ago. And these tools continue to improve, you know, they're just getting better and better. We've all seen it from everything from ATMs replacing, you know, bank tellers to, you know, moving, you know, expert systems into medical field. You know, we're inventing and innovating literally more and more of the population out of jobs. It's an issue that's, I think, even part of what we're seeing right now. It certainly is. It's overshadowed by, you know, the economic downturn and by globalization, but it's not going to stay overshadowed forever. I mean, people, and there are solutions to that. And, you know, people can be retrained. People are being pushed out of jobs that they have the skill set for, right? But the problem is that skill set bar keeps moving up as well, because computers and robots get better and better at doing things themselves. And I don't think that's a thing that's going to stop. I think that's a thing that may very well even accelerate at some point. And you know, I've many times said, you know, it's not like it's going to stop with blue collar, you know, robots building cars, you know, and if managers think that computers are going to need managers, you know, they not so much really. You know, some people think that certain white collar, and you know, every skill set, every different specialization moves at a different pace, but you know, there aren't ones that are just completely safe. You know, computer CEO, as it were, could be definitely a possibility. And I think that, you know, Eclipse Phase has kind of built into it. I mean, they've jumped way beyond it, but the game has got built into it a discussion of these sorts of tensions again, much further along. And I think that makes the game interesting in, you know, something to play with and tinker with and try and model certain things and model ways that we might handle things. Because, you know, we're heading towards a future that could have really ugly things happen in it. And we also could have really cool things happen in it. And I have a lot of optimism for what's coming. We're just gonna have to see. And plus, Eclipse is just a damn cool game. It's absolutely recommended. You can buy it on Amazon. I'll put a link in the show notes. And you can also, like I said, if you want to download it and take a look, freaking rules are Creative Commons license. And how cool is that? You know, so excellent game. And that's been what I've been monkeying with lately and thinking about. So I guess that's it for today. Almost half an hour. So this has been Ken Kennedy, and this is Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone. You can email me at kkennedy@kenzoid.com. That's K-K-E-N-N-E-D-Y at kenzoid.com, K-E-N-Z-O-I-D. That's the website where the podcast is. You can comment there. My Twitter handle is Kenzoid, and my Google profile link will be in the show notes. So that's it for this week, and I will talk to you guys again next week, and we'll see what's going on then.